children. Hi, and welcome to Cartwheels on the Sky, Poets, Poems, and Discoveries. I'm your host, Blake Moore, and tonight, right here on KGUA Wallala, I'm going to be featuring the poems and process of Ukiah poet Michael Riedel. Michael Riedel was born and raised in San Diego, and for more than two decades, he has lived in inland Mendocino County with his wife, Kate, and worked at Ukiah High School as a teacher of English and creative writing. He also coaches the school's poetry club and slam team. Michael's first experience reading poetry in public was as a first-placed winner in the inaugural Ukiah Haiku Festival. Since then, he has read widely in Mendocino County and often has poems broadcast on KZYX's excellent Rhythm Running River poetry show. He was proud to serve as the Poet Laureate of Ukiah from 2016 to 2018, and in normal times, he hosts Ukiah's long-standing monthly literary reading series, Writers Read. He is the author of two books of poetry, The Way of Water and Small Talk and Long Silences. And in 2018, he edited Deep Valley, an anthology of the first seven Poets Laureate of Ukiah. His one-act plays have been produced by the Willett Shakespeare Theater and at Mendocino College. This show was recorded earlier this week.
Well, hello, Michael Riedel. It is such a pleasure to have you here with me on Cartwheels on the Sky.
Bravo. Thank you very much.
So why don't you start us off with a poem?
All right. I'm going to read you this is a poem called Contingency Plans, and I actually wrote it in two parts, and then a friend said, you don't need the second part. So here is part one, Contingency Plans. When the plague has hung its dark wreath at every door and the sound of wailing weeps through every window, meet me high on the mountain above town, deep in the firs and redwoods, where ages beneath a thick canopy have left the undergrowth sparse and the ground cool. When the fires in their fury leap from home to home, and neighborhoods of children and goodwill are flattened into smoldering ash and a few crippled chimneys, meet me where the rocks and waves play out their strange dance, where stars and starfish and waiting birds bear witness to the pulse and rhythm of time's patient stretch. I'll be nearby on the beach, digging my heels in the soft sand. When the cities of brick and angst rage with two loose armies of grimaces and grievances, those who want more and those who want to keep all they have, two shades of self-preservation and distrust, meet me, please meet me, far beyond the reach of concrete, where roads return to dirt and the traces of the human are few, where the red-winged blackbird chatters from branch to branch. Meet me there where I'll be walking with a backpack heading who knows where, just away, away. Bring with you water, what food you can, a few clothes to keep you warm when evening comes, and bring too something with light, an instrument, a book, even a single poem to remind us that dawn does come also, that the sun does shine again on a new day, that there is, even now, even here, hope.
Fabulous.
Every now and then, a little bit of hope.
Is that one of your few hope poems?
There's a scarcity of hope poems lately. I think that there, it's like kind of a, I don't know, in between the lines, the hope is still there. But to even have to talk about hope, you know, is sort of an indication of where we are. Like,
we
need hope
right.
These days.
It's such a unique time to be a poet, Do you find that it has shifted your look into your own self as a poet, or changed your voice, or impacted you on these ways that you would not have expected?
Yeah. You know, I like writing my little backyard bird poems, you know. That would be, someday it'll be nice to be going back to those, but there's definitely more of a political edge, or just kind of a social consciousness edge to things that I've been writing, you know, for a while. I, you know, 6 months or so, obviously, but then I probably want to say more like a year, but it's probably also to say more like 4 years, 5 years. So, yeah, it's just kind of an increasing direction of my writing.
So why don't we talk a little bit about you and who you are and how poetry expresses itself in your life?
Well, kind of big question. I'm from San Diego, and very slow learner. Eventually, like at the age of 23, I went to Humboldt State, transferred up there. And then that was really where I kind of kicked into gear in terms of reading and then eventually writing. And I did some traveling and lived for a bit in Alaska and Costa Rica, and then returned to Humboldt and got my teaching credentials. So kind of teaching and writing are, you know, kind of my two worlds that I'm doing. And I think with poetry, for me, the thing that I like is that it allows me, or it sort of requires me, to slow down, to be reflective, to think, to kind of work through things, you know. And to me, that's the real value, you know. It's nice to have a product. It's nice to be able to read something to people and they like it. But for me, it's maybe a more like selfish kind of thing. It helps me to kind of find a balance, to find my own sort of, what are my rhythms that I'm going through right now? What are my, you know, thoughts or feelings that I'm working through? And I guess just putting things into words, you sometimes discover sort of where you're at and what you're thinking, what you're doing.
Yeah, that's a really great way of putting it.
So that's, I think it's sort of, you know, we talk about, you know, different people and, I don't know, meditation or various things, and, you know, their practice. And so for me, I think poetry really kind of serves in that kind of a way.
Right.
That when I'm at my best and writing a lot, it's my practice.
Mm-hmm. Have you found yourself writing a lot during COVID?
You know what? For the first while, I also write songs, and for the beginning part, I was especially writing a lot of songs, and then they were all in some goofy way or another having to do with, you know, the lockdown, and then I kind of slowed down, honestly, for a while. In the summer, I was really not writing songs or poetry too much, and then more recently, I have. I'm really fortunate. I have a group of teachers, retired teachers, and we meet once a week. And so when school got back into gear and I started to get used to, you know, Zooming with kids, so I got used to doing that. And I realized, oh my gosh, my poetry group can get back together on Zoom and it'll work perfectly. And I'm really thrilled to be able to say that was exactly what happened. And so with them, and sort of this, it's once a week, and we just have a word. Like, my word for this week is oil. So whatever you write, doesn't matter. Write whatever the hell you want, but you need to get the word oil in there somehow. And even just having that group, so I'm way just kicking back into gear for sure. So that's great.
That's nice to have a group of people that you get together. So do you do that once a week and then read?
It's once a week. Okay. Yeah, and I think we're either in year 9 or 10. Like, it's been spectacularly successful. My buddy, Mr. Ron Ford, who was a teacher in Ukiah for 45 years before he retired, Chris Dossett is my buddy who's in there, Jessica Lee, Ted Peterson is another retired teacher, and Lonnie Harwell, who he's sort of the surprise because he is an auto shop guy, and he heard that I had a poetry group, and he's like, hey, you doing poetry? And I was like, yeah, auto shop guy. I had no idea, this new teacher at our school. And so it's cool. Good.
Oh, that's great. I actually decided yesterday that there's a post-Zoom letdown that happened. I had I had two Zoom meetings, and it was, you know, later in the day yesterday. And when it was over, and I was meeting with a woman in Australia, when it was over, I found myself like, oh, now what? It's Saturday night, and I'm okay, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So
the house is quiet. All
and
is
I
good.
Realized it was like post-Zoom depression, or, you know, I wouldn't want to call it depression. It's not that severe, but it is really a little bit of a thing that I've started to notice with myself. And I thought, well, maybe it's because, you know, the monkey in you is staring at yourself in a screen, too. You know, there's this dynamic of watching yourself while you're interacting that I noticed early on with the kids, because you see them preening, especially the younger
ones. Yeah.
They're all, oh, look at me.
Yeah. Some of the students have, like, backgrounds with, like, you know, light, and, you know, they're stringing up, like, Christmas lights or something behind them. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, they're doing.
You
have you seen that with your high school students, that they're doing interesting things with their backgrounds and their environments to try to at least to bring a little life into their Zoom room?
Right, yeah. Some of them are, and some are just, like, loath to turn on the camera at all. Just, you know, it's definitely hit and miss for sure. But there are a lot of kids that are doing pretty well with it. So that's good.
So thinking about this, because you teach creative writing in school.
I do.
And so are you finding the same thing with their work?
Well, you know, I don't have the creative writing class right now.
Okay.
And we usually have a poetry group, but it's such an odd time that that is just not happening right now. So that's kind of a bummer.
Mm-hmm.
I think that last year our poetry group was a little bit, I don't know, more shy than they've been in the past, and just kind of less organized. And so I'm hoping that, you know, one of these days we're going to be back in person and then we can kind of kick things back into gear.
Find a way to get that going. Do you find that teaching
exactly.
has impacted you as a poet and your own self-expression?
I think that a lot of the times when you tell people that you're an English teacher, one thing that I hear a lot is people say, wow, how can you read the same thing over and over? Like I just recently finished teaching To Kill a Mockingbird, which is still just fabulous. And there were many years in between where I wasn't teaching it. But it really is true that the more you read some of these texts, the more you're finding how things flow together, how they work, how the ideas, you know, from one part of the book tie in with another, just like a deep, deep reading that I think really is useful to study. Probably the book that I've done that the most with is probably Of Mice and Men, which is, it's just spectacular, that as soon as one thing is kind of finished, one idea is finished, Steinbeck misses not a single beat. The very next paragraph will move on to the new thing. There's, you know, it's a short, short book, and it's because it is pared down to the essence. There's not a word, you know, out of place or extra. And so I think kind of recognizing the ability of authors to be that focused and organized is something that is an influence or, you know, something for me to strive toward, you know, not that I do it, but at least hoping to get there.
Do you find in teaching something like Mice and Men that your students, because of that compact stacking of ideas, that they have a hard time finding the next flow, and is it challenging for them, or do they just jump right in because of that?
I think they jump right in, because I think that especially in a book like that that's, I don't know, 107 pages or something, I think that because there's not any extra, it's like everything that's there is valuable, so make sure, like, on every page you're figuring out what's the valuable thing here, because there's something. And so there's not the, you know, extraneous sort of just hang a left turn here and talk about some other thing. It's just not happening. And I think that you know, maybe larger, less honed books will sometimes have more than they necessarily need, you know?
Right, and then it sounds almost like busy work, like, oh, God, this writer can just say it, and he'd stop describing the color of the leaves in 12 different ways.
One thing that has been really helpful in the kind of modern era is that my whiteboard up in front, there's a projector that shines down onto it. So when I have kids in the class, I can show anything on my computer screen, I can show them. So one thing I've been able to do is show lots of poetry, because I don't need to make, like, copies. Like, you know, in the beginning of my career, you'd have to make a copy of something, pass it around. You just, you know, use tons of paper and all that stuff. And so it's nice to be able to just show things like a broader spectrum of writing. And you know, kids get out of what they do, and then you don't have to spend all day on it, because it was just an easy thing to do. And so you can spend like 5 minutes on something, 3 minutes on something sometimes. And you're just like, huh, isn't that cool? That kind of goes with the theme of what we were just talking about. And then on to the next thing. So
read another poem.
Okay, so here's another one, sort of education one. And I think everything I'll read you today will be pretty new. This is called Bear Week. We were grumbling our woes at break, finding a laugh where we could, when a colleague and friend stepped out of his room, raised a fist, and said, "Yes, it's Bear Week." He quelled our confusion by explaining it's a contest of watching bears in Alaska hunting salmon in rivers and guessing which one will get fattest. "I'll take anything these days to be excited about," he felt the need to add. We went back to our rooms, back to our computers, back to our remote classes and talking to boxes filled with the distant heads of bored teenagers. "I should check out Bear Week," I thought. And then this morning, doom-scrolling through the New York Times headlines, I saw the winner of Bear Week was number 747. A week gone? And where was my head? Where were my thoughts? Where was my mind? So now I take the time to enjoy the view. The slow and robust grizzly trudging over rock toward the edge of the river's deeper flow, where salmon hatched years ago, further up this icy river, leap out of the water with their impulse to move, an organic faith in struggle and destiny, until their flesh is caught by a beast they could not conceive, and which all their strength will serve to feed.
That's great. And we are we talking about the same Bear Week?
Yeah, the other day.
Yeah, but this is Bear Week. It takes place in Provincetown. Isn't that usually in July?
No, there was one, I don't know, up in Alaska. There was one.
Oh, in Alaska. So this is actually a different Bear Week. We're not talking about the same Bear Week.
Lots of Bear Weeks, huh?
Is Bear Week in Alaska about bears?
Yeah. It's bears. It's who gets the fattest off the salmon in the river, and you get to.
Just do me a favor. Anyone who's listening, feel free to look up Provincetown Bear Week, and you will get a different fattest bear. There is a fattest bear contest too, but it's the largest gathering of bears in the world, and I'll say tens and thousands come to Provincetown during this annual event to go to parties, bars, and clubs.
I'm afraid.
There's some great pictures.
That was one where for you, like, prior knowledge sometimes, like, skews your comprehension drastically.
Oh, yeah. I was,
that
know,
sounds like that, you
listening
know?
To your poem and thinking, you know, because kids are, when they discover certain things, especially with the internet, I've noticed high school students, it's very exciting to play with these taboo subjects and throw them toward the teachers and see if you know. Mm-hmm. And I, as a visiting poet in the schools, I've definitely encountered, especially years ago, I think less so now because I think more people know everything because of the internet. But there were periods of time when I would see students thinking they were being all sly and saying things, and maybe the teacher didn't get it, but I'm like, where do you think I've been living, kids? I'm not under the rock. I would just laugh and enjoy the humor and the secret of it all because they weren't hurting anybody by any means. You know, they're just being kids. Anyway, give me another poem because I feel like I talk too much and I haven't heard enough of your fantastic poetry. So would you?
Here's another one. You just reminded me, just like the degree to which kids these days are sort of, I don't know, they're getting old fast or getting experienced fast.
Right.
And yet the opposite is also kind of now true, that the rate of having sex and various things of high school students is actually decreasing now. It's slowing down, which is kind of nice. Here's a poem sort of about that. Also, it's just kind of escapism, which I think is partly where my brain is these days. If I were to go, if I were to go, it would be to find a bench in the plaza of a far-off Mexican town where church bells ring on the hour and pigeons live on puddle water and tossed bread. I'd join the old men, be a mute among them, watching sun set and young lovers gather. Yes, I'd play chess. Yes, I would cough. Yes, I would be a fool with stained shirts and memories. And I would whisper to the boy strolling hand in hand beside the girl with green ribbons wound in her braids. Espera, espera, mijo. Hay dulzura en esperar. Wait, wait, my boy. There is sweetness in waiting.
Wonderful. I love that
Thank you.
idea. Sovereignty, body sovereignty, so important right now, more than
And
ever.
just keeping the mystery alive, you know, like keeping
Yeah, right. And then
slowing
just the
down.
magic of yourself, because I
Exactly.
mean, all of us who've experienced the, do I say, inappropriate relaxing of our boundaries, that might be a
Yeah.
nice way of saying it,
Yeah.
have experienced the aftermath of such choices.
Yeah.
And when you're young, you don't quite have the filters to process it the way that you do when you're older. And
Yeah.
so it's much better to keep that beautiful. That's
Thank
great.
you.
Do you ever read your poems to your students?
Oh, mostly no. Really rarely, but with when I'm teaching creative writing, sort of I've generally unless and it has happened a couple of times over the years where people would be like, no, you bring in like guest poets. Why don't you just read to us? And
Right.
so I've done that. But generally, the things that I would read in the creative writing class are things that I read, or excuse me, things that I wrote like that day in the creative writing class, you know? So whatever the prompt would be, and it's like, okay, who has anything that they want to read? And then sometimes they say, well, what did you do? And I say, oh, okay, here I go. And then, you know, share whatever I did. But it's kind of one of those things where, you know, when you're the teacher, you've been given quite a power,
Yeah.
and, you know, you don't want to stomp on that too much. You want to keep it in check pretty well. So,
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you don't want to overly merge with them and let them know all of your brain thoughts because then they might over-identify with you and then not form their own.
you know, I'm just one poet of a bazillion, you know,
Right.
so
Well,
they're probably already getting my influence enough. They don't need yet
any
more or
more.
something.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you've been so great. I've got to go in and read for your students, and what a powerful, just heart-filling experience to be able to have them ask questions and see their faces and have them listen and learn. And it's really an honor to get to go do that work with you.
Nice. Well, it's always good to have you because I think that indeed they're getting sort of the Rydell version of the world kind of on a daily basis, and so that then when Blake Moore can show up, right, and this dun dun dun, so whenever you're going to be coming to my class, I was like build you up. You
I
better
know,
be good
it's
every
so
time
great.
because man, it's been a drum roll, you know.
I feel like I'm entering a giant stadium.
Well, but the
That
sad
feeling
thing
of like,
though.
whoa, the lights come on.
The sad thing is that in all of Mendocino County, I have the only creative writing class at a high school level at all, I think, still. That it's just kind of sad. And then so there are 30 kids or whatever we have in the room, and they are not just like a regular English class where, you know, everybody's hearing English and just suffer through it or whatever.
Logging
Creative writing
along,
class
right.
is like,
Yeah.
no, we have a lot of electives at our school, and that they're choosing this. They're into it, you know. So
And that's what's so
when
great.
you
We've
are
been producing this book together for how many years?
I think we just did our eighth book, seventh book, something like that.
And we're not talking a skinny book. We're talking,
No, we're
has been upwards
talking,
to 300 pages.
right. So if we have 30 kids and we do 10 pages per kid, it has worked out pretty well. So, you know, we start in August and then we're writing and writing every day. And then long around March is when we start to cull together the best of what we've done. And I think we get it to you mid to late April, I think, by the time we really send it off. And then just in the nick of time, we have a book, and it's a pretty amazing thing to hand a kid. You
Yeah,
know,
and last
here's a
year we
book,
had their,
and you
instead of the
are
big
in.
group picture, it was the Zoom pictures on the back cover last year, and I guess we're not going to do it this year. Another casualty of COVID, which is disappointing, you
Yeah.
know. There's been a number of projects for me that I've done with you 20 years in a row, and then 20, year 21, sorry, you know. So
Yeah.
watching these things kind of fall off the shelf, it's disappointing for me because I don't have that
Yeah.
kind of built-in security in my
Yeah.
work. And it's
Yeah.
kind of like you're the first one to go. So it's been hard, but I also recognize it changes what it is, and this is another kind of change. But I do feel the most for the students
Yeah.
because they're the ones who are missing some of the enrichment opportunities that they would normally have.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's, you know, kind of the bummer of being the teacher is, you know, you're looking into the Zoom and seeing the kids. The flip side is the kids are in their room and just kind of bummed, and this is what I'm getting from my education kind of thing. And so, you know, everybody's doing the best they can. One of the really kind of amazing things is that attendance is really good, like surprisingly very good, at least as good as normal. And I think what it is here you have a ton of, you know, kids across America, probably across the world, and there's no sort of structure to their day. And so, oh, I have to show up to Red Hills English class at 8:15, and bam, there they are. Right. And I think it just is like something to hold on to. So that's a pretty sweet thing, really.
Yeah.
So I think that's what we're all doing, you know, is we're just trying to find what can we hold on to? What can we manage with, you know?
Right. Well, we're almost out of time. Is there a way people can find your work?
Oh, where the heck is my work? I don't know. It's on Rhythm Running River every now and then. Dan Roberts does pretty well on having me on there sometimes. You could, I hate to say this, but you could Amazon me, or better yet, I do have a couple books at the Mendocino Book Company. That's where you could go.
Okay.
Mendocino Book Company. Look up Michael Riedel in the poetry section. And, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe I'll put some links on the show link, too, so you could have
that. Yeah, that'd be good.
As well. Why don't you take us out with a poem?
Okay. Here's a kind of having fun with the craziness of our world. This is called Made. You know you've made it when someone takes the time to carve you into wax. Still greater is when others choose to ignore the dull, dead, marble-eye stare you're doomed with. They walk before you, turning side to side, judging your height, your blue suit, your tie, the strange way you lean forward on the balls of your feet, at least in this wax form. It's a fake version of a man who pretended all his life to be more than he was, until he somehow became more than anyone could ever imagine, more than they could believe. He would love that they pay just to stand here beside him, even if it is just to snap a selfie with a peace sign or a middle finger to his face or clenching a fist to his jaw. That famous hair looks just weirdly right, and the thick makeup he wore in real life is perfectly reproduced. And that smile is stretched so broad you'd swear wax has learned to love itself.
That was a great ending.
Wax loves itself. Perfectly
yes,
reproducing real life.
Well, thank you so much, Michael Riedel. It has been such a pleasure to hear your voice and your poetry and just feel your passion for life. I'm really grateful.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Thanks.
And that concludes my interview with Ukiah poet and educator Michael Riedel. I'm going to be back week after next with Mendocino poet and who's recently moved to Los Angeles, but he's coming back and forth, Jasper Henderson. I'm going to take a break next week since it is Halloween. So stay tuned here on KGUA for more wonderful local programming. Take care and have a wonderful evening. This is Blake Moore with Cartwheels on the Sky. But your love and I'm giving everyone except for you. Your kind of